Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With the new Chevy Silverado, you might be driving in this. But with the Silverado's redesigned interior and large infotainment screens, it'll feel more like this. Introducing the new 2022 Chevy Silverado. Find new upgrades. Find new roads. Chevrolet.
It's the blue.
It is the Blue Room. It is the weekly show. An episode I haven't played for a while, but still plenty to talk about. If you're on YouTube, you'll be able to see. Got four guests to start us off today. Les Roberts, Patrick Widge, and Peter McFarlane. But join us for the first 15 minutes of the show. Everton great. One of our favourite guests to get on all the time. It's Super Kev Campbell. Kev, how are you doing, mate?
I'm really good, Matt. Thanks for having me on, guys. And hi to Les, Patrick, and Peter. And all the people joining. So hopefully let's make it a good 15.
Yeah, 15 minutes. So we've got you a very busy man. Before it'd be great to get you on. Obviously, we'll have a little chat about the Blues now we're getting on in general before you shoot off. But first and foremost, Kev, I thought it'd be nice to have a chat about Wayne Rooney, and who obviously retired from playing earlier this week, gone on to manage Derby County now. He's hung up his boots. First and foremost, just want to ask you, can you believe that 16-year-old lad who burst into the first-team squad has had a whole career and hung them up? Because it certainly makes me feel old looking back on his career and seeing...
Oh, don't start all that, Matt, with me. I'm telling you, jeez. Look, like I said previously, you know, the first time I ever played with Wayne, he was 14 years old. So to look now and to see him, his trajectory throughout his career, and now he's hung them up to manage... You know, it's remarkable. He's had a remarkable career. He's been a fantastic footballer for England. And, you know, he's broken records. He's done all the bits and pieces. And he's still a Blue, which I love. Obviously, he's gone through some tough times as well. But in general, you know, he's made his mark in the game. And what a fantastic guy as well. Brilliant. And I'm pleased and I'm proud. That, you know, I played with him and I captained him and stuff like that. So, yeah, what a lovely lad.
Yeah, and before we throw it to the other lads, because I know they've got some questions for you about this as well. You say that about being proud of him, and, you know, I remember when he first burst into the side, you know, there's that famous picture of the two of you, isn't there, after the Arsenal game where he's on your back, you give him a bit of a piggyback. Did you sort of take it upon yourself to be a bit of a mentor to him when he first came into the side, or was it sort of like a natural gravitation between the two of you?
Well, I'm captain, so, you know, I've got to deal with everybody. And he's a likeable lad, Wayne. You know, he was such a huge talent, obviously being at the club. But, you know, he would gravitate to the young lads at times, and he would gravitate, this is the great thing about Wayne, and he'll gravitate to the more experienced players as well. You know, there was myself, Fergie, Big Dunk, Stubbsy, etc. And Wayne was good with everybody. So I can't really say it was really under my remit to put my arm around him, although I did do that. But, you know, he was just good with everybody. He was a likeable lad. As I said, big talent. And, you know, we knew where he was destined for.
Absolutely. Pete, I'll come to you first, mate. What are your memories of that time and his first spell and Wayne and Kev being together up front?
Well, I mean, on a personal note, in terms of Wayne Rooney, I remember the first time I saw him on the team sheet. I think it was the season before away at Southampton, and he'd been named on the bench. And funnily enough, we'd actually played against him in a match. He played for De La Salle. I played for SFX, so we'd sort of played against him, you know, throughout school. So I was aware of Wayne Rooney before he actually broke into the Everton side. You were aware of his name in like that sort of level of you know, being in the schools and stuff. You'd always hear about players who played for Everton, played for Liverpool, but Wayne Rooney was always one that really stuck out. So I remember the first time I saw him warming up for Everton, I thought, wow, this is incredible. It was the first time I'd seen anyone who I'd personally, you know, played against or played sort of on the same pitch as, who actually then took that step up. But he was an incredible player and incredible talent, and he certainly did burst onto the scene. Everyone always thinks that, you know, they refer to the Arsenal game as the game that really sort of that put him on the big stage. But he'd scored in the cup a few weeks earlier as well, hadn't he? He'd scored twice in the cup, I think, against Wrexham. So it was incredible talent. It was a very exciting time to be an Evertonian.
Yeah, Kev, was that, you know, Pete mentioned there about how, you know, his name was sort of ringing out on Merseyside before he played for Everton and it being the first team. Was that something that people talked about within the club? You know, were you seeing any lads sort of saying in training, you know, there's a young lad in the reserves here that's making strides, is going to be playing?
No, he didn't. This is the great thing, and this is the crazy thing. No, there was no real talk about, remember, because Wayne was a schoolboy, don't forget. So there was no reserve games or anything like that, who we were, you know, because the name, but we heard, because we speak to some of the staff, that there's a young lad coming through who's good. His name's Wayne Rooney. Great, okay, fine. So when I ended up playing with him at Southport, and Taffy said to me, this is Wayne Rooney, and I'm looking at this kid, and I'm thinking, the kid's too big for him, you know, it's like, what? But, well, it left an impression on me, and that was 2 years prior. I went back into the dressing room, and I told the lads, listen, there's this kid Rooney coming up. He should be with us now. Get out, Cam. Get what you're talking about. You know, as soon as he finished school, he came in, and one training session, the lads were like, incredible, brilliant talent.
Jaws on the floor.
Yeah, jaws on the floor.
Les, go on, sorry, maybe you're going to make a point there.
I was just going to say, that Puma kit seems to be massive on everyone. That one with the big white...
Oh, yeah, you could fly in that, couldn't you? You could fly in that one.
I was going to say, actually, me and my dad were down at Wrexham when you and Wayne scored in that cup game.
Yeah.
And obviously, his sort of breakthrough game, as Pete said, was that, like, that Arsenal one with the famous winning goal. But I just want to go back to that Southampton game that Pete was talking about when he was on the bench, because I remember at the time... We were all desperate to see him because we'd heard him. You know, he'd scored that goal against Tottenham, the free kick in the under 18.
Yeah.
He'd scored that, but he was on everyone's radar at this point. Feeling like in the squad, sort of, that he was on the bench with an anticipation that he'd play. And how was he sort of acting on the day? Because, as you say, he was a 16-year-old lad going down to Southampton with the team he supported his entire life, and he's got a chance of getting on a pitch, but he didn't quite get to it then.
There was no hullabaloo from him or anything like that. He just took everything in his stride, if I'm honest with you. You know, he was he believed in his talent, and to be on the bench obviously was a fantastic honour for him. But I don't think I'll be doing it justice if I speak for Wayne Rooney. All I know is going down to Southampton and having a young protege on the bench was a good sign for the football club. That was a really good sign for the Blues. And for me as a player, I love seeing youngsters coming through, talented youngsters. So remember, I played with him, so I knew. All the others didn't know. I knew what he could do. Obviously, a fantastic day, but he was on the radar for the Blues.
Yeah. I think as well, Patrick, you know, you think back to those, certainly Wayne's first spell at the football club and how he went about it. And I think a lot of people, maybe a lot of Evertonians, if you look at this through our Royal Blue tinted spec, say yeah. that, you know, as a footballer and an individual player, that those were the best years of his career, where he was raw, where he'd run at people, where he had blistering speed. That time watching Everton, obviously, it'd been difficult. It would have been a lot more difficult had it not been for Kev keeping us up when he arrived at the football club a few years before, of course. But it had been difficult. And I just remember that time being just so thrilling that we had such an incredible player that had come through, and he was one of our own.
Yeah, I mean, so that season, that 2002-2003 season, is the first season that I started watching Everton, the first season that I got into football. My dad was an Evertonian, but the first game I actually went to was Elland Road when Rooney came off the bench. And I think you played in that game, Kev.
I did, yeah.
And, you know, I was 7 at the time, I think, and being kind of from the Leeds area as well, it was such a big thing for us to win there. 50-odd years, I think, it'd been since we won at Elland Road, and Rooney came off the bench and just skipped round 3 or 4 players and then slotted that into the corner. And then that's obviously like 2 weeks or 3 weeks after the Arsenal goal. And just that ability, I stand by this, that I've never seen a player since that at that age, that 16, 17, 18 years old, was as good as Rooney was at that time. I can't really remember Messi, you know, watching Spanish football 15 years ago wasn't like it is now. I can't really remember Messi at that age, but I can't think that Ronaldo would have been that good. No, but at that age, at 16, 17, 18, and he was like a player in his prime. And just like you mentioned, Matt, that rawness and that talent. And I wondered, Kev, if there was, you mentioned in that first training session that kind of the entire team realised what you'd been saying, that this kid was ready to play. But was there like one moment in a game that you played with Wayne, or one moment in a training session that you can remember that made you think like he's got everything? In that one kind of moment, one moment that kind of encapsulated Rooney in that first spell at Everton?
Not really. I mean, remember, the first time I played for him, he was 14.
Yeah.
So, you know, he wasn't even full time. And I was like, I was open mouthed. You know, it's the rest of the squad were playing catch up. I knew. I was lucky to have witnessed it. And normally, you know, when you go off, we were playing Southport, and when you go off I was captain of a football club. When you go off, you just go straight into the dressing room and shower. I sat on the bench. I wanted to watch him. And they moved him from striker to wide left. And he absolutely run the show. So I was just like, wow, this kid is good. He's something special. So, you know, you get in the next day and you tell the lads, and the lads are laughing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What are you talking about? What you been drinking? I said, you will see. And, you know, some were asking questions. And you're telling them, like, you know, yeah, you play like a first-team player, so overs and balls around the corner, little flick-ons, little touches. Yeah. He was there. He just knew everything, what to do. You know, defenders were coming in trying to get the ball off him, and he was only, he looked slight. But he had man strength. He was holding him up. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
This little kid here, wow, incredible. So, and he's only going to get stronger and he's only going to get better. My sad part was Everton didn't have the funds to keep him and build. That's a tough part. And I know David Moyes tried to talk it up that Wayne wanted to leave. He did. He didn't want to leave. Everton needed the money. And that kind of put a bit of a sour taste in a lot of Evertonians' mouths at the time that Wayne left. But it wasn't Wayne asking to leave. It was Everton needed the money. So, you know, imagine that him being at Everton for a decade, you know, you could have built something real special around him.
Just quickly, Kev, before we move on to the current team, is that a spell, or is that a time where you reached out to yourself? Obviously, you know, coming into the team, you were his first captain in senior football. When that was all going on, did he speak to you at all? Did he ask for advice? Did he talk?
Yeah, I spoke to him, of course. I think it's important to be able to, because remember, he's never been through all this. He's a young kid. and the manager's coming out and saying one thing. Obviously, he's getting different advice from all over. So I said, at the end of the day, Wayne, the bottom line of it is, as long as you know what's going on and you could tell your story, probably you won't be able to tell your story at first. I said, but you will get your story out there. You will, because that's just the way football works. But because you're so young, you know, you don't want to get caught in front of those media guys and they trip you up. So just be careful, you know, just keep playing your football. I said, let your football do the talking. And well, his football done the talking all right.
Absolutely, mate. Just before you go, Kev, last couple of minutes, Everton obviously doing fantastically well at the moment, flying high in the table. As we sit here recording this, I think we're still six, but 6 points off the top with a couple of games in hand. So it's looking quite rosy for Carlo Ancelotti's toppies at the moment.
Listen, let me just say this. Carlo Ancelotti and Big Dunk and all the staff are doing a great job. There's been times where, you know, Richarlison wasn't there and the team never won without Richarlison. Now the team have got over that hump. When Richarlison ain't playing, the team have won. Players have stepped up. When Alan ain't there or whatever, James Rodriguez ain't there, there's players in the group who have stepped up and they're winning. And, you know, sometimes the momentum gets broken when there's games called off or whatever. But, you know, it gives a chance for Dominic Calvert-Lewin to shake off this hamstring and for players to be rested to go again. So, fingers crossed, Everton could have a right go. Obviously, next game is Sheffield Wednesday, isn't it, in the FA Cup. Want to have a cup run? For sure. Definitely do. But, you know, what a great job Carlo Ancelotti's doing. And he's building a squad. He is building a squad. Obviously, he needs more players. He does need more quality in there. But you could start seeing a squad come together now, can't we?
Yeah, it's exciting, mate. Absolutely. I won't ask you for a prediction of where we're going to finish or anything like that. Like you said, it's probably best we go under the radar for the time being.
Yeah, I'd rather listen. When we get to March, I come back on.
Absolutely. I'll just... Yeah, absolutely.
You heard it here. And when it comes to March, listen, I could shout from there.
Kev will be 5 points clear by then, mate, so it won't even be that exciting.
Don't say that.
Close into it. But yeah, always appreciate your time, mate, and your thoughts. Thanks very much for coming on. And like you said, we'll speak to you again in March.
No problem. Take care, guys. Cheers.
See you later.
See you. Bye.
Kevin Campbell, Everton.
When you bundle your renters and auto insurance with Progressive, you could save money, but it doesn't cover any terrible memories living rent-free in your head.
You remember that time you were singing in the shower, and then you heard a knock on the wall, and then you realized that your bathroom shared a wall with your neighbor's bedroom, and all you could do was stand there silently, thinking about all the other things they may have heard in the 4 years you've lived there? Yeah, good times.
Sorry, we can't save you from that memory, but we could save you money bundling your renters and auto insurance with Progressive. Coverage from Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and third-party insurers. Renters insurance and bundle discount not available in all states or situations.
Great. Yeah, wonderful stuff. I don't know about you lads, I sort of hinted at it there with Kev, but Rooney retiring did make me feel very old. I think the first player ever breaking through really as a teenager, sort of the same sort of age, a little bit older than me, but it's, you know, he's had a whole career long in the morning. It's a bit like
life. The thing for me is nothing will make me feel any older than the Everton manager being younger than me, which was the case when Bill was in charge. So I've crossed that route.
There we go. I mean, just on his, obviously Kev spoke about the early days there and coming through and the excitement, and you know, obviously a lot of his career was spent away from Everton. I think it's probably fair to say he's an England legend, a Man United legend, but not an Everton one. I'll just sort of look back at his time and his links with Everton, Pete, because it's been a bit of a troubled time, hasn't it? I think especially when he left in those early days, as we spoke about there. But gradually he's rebuilt those links. The second spell wasn't quite what we all hoped and dreamed it would be, but Wayne Rooney and Everton feel like they're on good terms going forward, at least.
Yeah, I think he started building bridges a couple of seasons before he came back. I think there was a lot of bad blood, a bit of taste left in our mouths after he celebrated in front of the park end when he scored his first goal against us. But he did start sort of trying to build bridges. He was posting a lot of photos, you know, of his kids wearing Everton shirts, and You know, he played in Big Dunk's testimonial as well. So there was he'd sort of started putting in place the potential of him coming back. I think he can be put there on the pedestal of what is possible for our academy, and that's the best way I can put the biggest positive I can think is that, you know, if you're a young player, a young up and coming player, what better attraction to bring them to our academy than to say we made Wayne Rooney? Do you know what I mean? I think he, you know, his records speak for themselves. His record with England, his record with Manchester United. You know, he's the all-time leading scorer for England and Man United, and he was made in Everton. So, if we can make a player even half as good as him in the coming years, then you know, we'll be very lucky. But yeah, I think there's always going to be a massive element of regret, and also a massive, you know, what if. If he could have stayed, if he would have stayed, would he have taken us to the next level? You know, it's one of those things. It's a huge shame that we never got to see him in Everton, you know, at Everton for a huge chunk of his career. But you know, we enjoyed it when he was there.
Yeah, I think when you look back, Patrick as well, 30 million, or was it 27 million plus add-ons for Man United was a bit of a snip, wasn't it? Really.
Yeah, I mean, you imagine what that'd be now, you know, for a Premier League. You just kind of think it's totally different. It's almost like a different game, isn't it, in terms of the financial side of it. It's like totally alien that a player of that much quality would go for something like 27 million. But not even, is that half a Gylfi Sigurdsson, maybe? You know, like it's, and I don't mind Gylfi, but you know, it's just, you'd be looking at, if a player like that now came through at a Premier League club, you're looking at 100, 150 million, that kind of quality. Because he was that good. I stand by it. Like, that Euro 2004 tournament, he was just on a different level to every other player at that tournament. And there was some unbelievable players across that kind of competition. And, I mean, that England team, he got injured, didn't he, against Portugal in the quarterfinal. He got injured in that one and sent off in the 2006 one, didn't he? And, I mean, I think, yeah, England would have got to the final in that if Rooney hadn't got injured in that game, because he was so instrumental. And he was that Mbappe level, but I think a level above. And yeah, like Pete mentioned, there's always going to be that regret kind of. And I think we noticed it as well in kind of the reaction to him retiring in a way. It was kind of very below par, maybe because he's gone straight into management and he's kind of been doing that role for the last few months anyway. But he was so good for so long, and maybe he won't get the recognition he deserves, even though he has got all these, you know, records of England's top goal scorer, Man United's top goal scorer. He maybe won't get the recognition he deserves, because at Man United it almost felt like he was never quite the key player. And then when it came to England in his later years, with it was always that he was going into a tournament, he'd always be injured, or he'd not been playing well in the few months before that, and everything was on his shoulders. And it kind of feels like, because of all that coming together, he'll never maybe get the respect he deserves further down the line for just how good he was. Like, you think of that United team in 07 to 09, and it was Ronaldo's team, really. But it wouldn't have worked without Rooney. So it's one of them, really. And yeah, if he'd have stayed at Everton, he would have probably been able to make... It might have been like, you know, Maradona-esque at Napoli. Do you know what I mean? That kind of elevating, maybe not quite to that standard. And you hope without all the stuff on the side as well, but less mafia involved. But, you know, it'd have been maybe that level of taking a team from one place to, you know, the very challenging for the top honours. So, but a brilliant player. And I hope he does well in management as well. And I liked him in his second spell with us, but I think that's more because kind of that sentimentality.
Yeah, it felt like those first two games we scored against Stoke and scored at City, it felt like this is going to be amazing. He's going to fire us to the top four or whatever, but obviously he's been quite...
I think, sorry, Matt. It's easy to forget as well. The first half of that season, he was probably our only bright spark, really.
Yeah.
You know, he carried that team on, and then obviously Allardyce came in and we kind of know the rest, and it's just a shame it ended the way it did.
I suppose to round this off, Les, you know, I think we can sit here and say he came through at the wrong time for the football club in regards to the team and that kind of thing. But in the same breath, you could say he came through at the right time, because as Kev alluded to there, I think it's sort of been well disclosed now that it wasn't just Man United coming in and you know, hooking Rooney away from us. There was a bit of Everton nudging him out the door to fill some to make some financial spreadsheets look a little bit better.
Yeah, it's always been, I've never felt so heartbreaking at a player leaving. So think about 6 years beforehand, we had Bambi doing us over and going to the Reds, and that was like, right, I can't believe this has done me head right, and I was finished with England at that point, because I was convinced once he'd gone to England, he'd been tapped up by the Reds, and he went. Rooney came along, and as you say, Pat, in that 2004 tournament, he was absolutely electric, and sort of England were back on my radar again, and I was like, all right, okay, so I can get on board with this again, and then he went to Man United, so I completely fell out with England, and
yeah.
Held a lot of animosity towards Rooney for years. Especially as Pete said, when he scored that goal at the Park End, we were like, he celebrated right across where we sit. And it was just the most infuriating thing ever. I think the disappointment for me, though, is that he could have elevated a mediocre side to do some damage in the league. Not necessarily win the thing, but maybe trouble the European and Champions League spots, which we did with lesser players the season after. It's always like, if he'd have just held on a season or two longer, give us 2-3 years till he was 20. He left when he was 18. It's like the potential he had at that point. He didn't have to leave then, but obviously, as Kev said, the club kind of pushed him out the door. And it's, you know, you kind of think what he went through then at that point. You know, for us as fans, we never really look at it from the player's point of view, or very rarely. And we're all upset and pissed off the fact that he's gone seemingly at the first opportunity. But then you think, you know, if he's gotten to the Everton team, he's doing well in the Everton team, the team he supports all his life, all his family supports, to then feel pushed out the door. I guess in that respect, you would maybe celebrate like that at Goodison. I wouldn't do it at the fans, but I'd be thinking, yeah, I want to stick one over the club at this point. It's you'll never know, as Kev said, if he does his autobiography and it all comes out in the wash, then we'll know. But the animosity will always be there, I think, just because of the way it was handled.
Yeah, there was so much opportunity. There was so much venom, wasn't there, at the time? I mean, you think back to some of those early games when he came back. You know, there's two in the season he left, wasn't there? They beat us in the cup.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I've said this on a show before. I always remember they had a couple on the pitch who'd won like a sponsors award or something, or like a raffle. And the girl shouted at him as he was going off, like shouted something as he was going off the pitch. They showed it on the telly. It was like, oh my God, you know, these are just here on like a bit of a corporate do, and they've won some raffle, and even they're giving him a stick.
I think the thing is you can't understate the impact that had on the entire fan base, because as you said, we were in a rotten position. Basically, Moyes came in and turned it around. This was like a real hope that like a player of ours has come through. He's potentially going to be the best in the world, and he's our player, and he supports Everton, and he was like every one of us on the pitch, like coin a cliche. So when he left, it made it even worse. The fact he went to United and became their sort of pet scouser annoyed me as well. Because they never, ever really, truly talk to him. And I'm convinced it's because he's a Scouser and there's the whole Manchester-Liverpool thing. And it just, the whole thing just left a really bad taste. Sorry, Backwood.
I was just kind of, one of the memories I've got from when Rooney left, I mean, I was devastated. Because like that England, that 2004 tournament, I kind of got into football at the 2002 World Cup, and then that 2004 Euros was like, the first tournament I just watched religiously all the way through, and I had like my Rooney England shirt, you know, and so it was like, that was like, you said, Les, it was like, that's our player doing these things on the world stage and being the best player at that tournament, the best player in Europe in that particular few weeks, and just tearing it up. And then I vividly remember when Rooney got sold, they were interviewing fans outside the ground, and I just got this guy, probably, you know, like, in his 20s or 30s, because Rooney had said once a blue, always a blue, auntie, and he basically just disowned Rooney on Sky News or Sky Sports News or BBC, whatever it was, and kind of the venom then. And then when he came back that 2005-2006 season, he scored that goal that he celebrated. I just think, like you mentioned with the fan on the pitch and the corporate, you know, the corporate dude, Matt, like giving him abuse, the lad was 19 or 20 at that age. And it's like, we do forget that. I know he kind of left and it was awful for us, but how is a 20-year-old lad going to feel that this is his fan base and his club, and he's gone back and it's just 40,000 people screaming at him? If you score, I can't really... I think we'd all in that situation, and especially with the fans not knowing everything, so you're the bad guy, we'd all in that situation kind of take out your aggression in some way, wouldn't you?
Yes.
And I've seen some tweets and things still like, kind of from people still can't get over that thing that happened 15 years ago when he was 20. And it's like, you just kind of move on. And I think that when it came, like you said, Peter, when he kind of started planting the seeds about coming back, people kind of got over it by then. But there were some people that definitely never did and could never take to him even when he came back. And, you know, I suppose, like you said, Les, he'll just always be there.
Yeah. Peter, did want to ask you, actually, when you played against him, were you thinking, I'm better than this lad, I could play for Everton?
Oh, yeah. No. As I say, there's certain players that you play against when you're a kid, and, you know, when you're in the change room before a match, you might say who's the best player on their team. You'll know the lads who play for Liverpool or play for Everton or, you know, Preston at the time. They had a decent youth team as well. But again, he stood out. There was a lad who played for Bluco called Anthony Barry. He was at Everton in the same team as him. And I went to primary school with him. And he'd always said about how amazing, you know, Wayne Rooney was. He was a name that everyone sort of knew about. Everyone knew how great he was. And I think he definitely scored two. He might have scored four against us in the last time we played against him. He was a special talent. As I say, it was just a crazy thing that you know, the first time you see him on the bench for Everton, you're talking a matter of weeks before we played against De La Salle in I think it was in the cup game. They'd knocked us out at our home ground, and it was bizarre, to be honest with you. I still. Him retiring has now confirmed to me that I will never play, you know, professional football. that's the one thing. You know, you were saying about you feel old. Well, yeah, I think I'm going to have to give up that ghost now.
Yeah, probably end for all of us, to be fair. But yeah. Hopefully he does well in management, like Patrick said. Anyway, I think he will do well at Derby. Let's move on to have a chat about some things that are going on at Everton at the moment. News about another young striker today, actually, has gone out on loan to Blackpool, Ellis Sims, until the end of the season. I think a couple of days, actually, after talking about how he's sort of happy at the youth setup and how he feels like he's doing well on the David Unsworth. But I'll come to you first on this one, Les. Feels like the right time for Ellis Sims to go out and test himself in some really competitive environments.
Yeah, I think, is he 20 now?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's getting to that age, isn't it, where it's kind of like you go out on loan now or never. Obviously, you have the sort of anomalies like Leon Osman, who seemed to go out on loan until he was about 24, wasn't it? And then got on the first team and stayed there. But yeah, you kind of think if he hangs around in the under-23s for any longer, he's not getting the exposure to proper first team, like our last football that he needs, which, you know, which Jared Branthwaite has done now, going to Blackburn as well. So that sort of shows that the club are looking at these players with a view to improving them by dropping them down and, you know, putting them out on loan in a lower league, which is, I think, all players, unless you are an exceptional talent like Wayne Rooney, I think most players need that sort of grounding, don't they? Because you can easily outgrow the under-23 setup. And we've seen players do it, haven't we? They just stagnated there and then, you know, they're still on the books like when they're 30 or something, it seems. We've made up about that.
Yeah, we just suppose we don't want it to be the new Conor McElhenney, do we, Patrick?
No, that's the one.
Definitely not, yeah.
Playing for the players when he's 26, getting a testimonial.
I think it's a good move for him. I'm sure it was part of the plan, but then you kind of maybe wonder why it wasn't done in August, because I think it was pretty clear last season he was definitely a talent. And I think maybe the thinking was that, especially since we left ourselves short letting Keane and Walcott go. And by the way, I just want to stress that I've got no issue with Keane and Walcott leaving on loan. A shame about Keane, because I don't think he'll ever come back, but we should make money on him. And Walcott obviously needed to go, but that decision not to bring anyone in, we were short up top and Tosin wasn't even fit at that point. So I think maybe the plan was to have Sims there, and if needed, he could play. Obviously, that hasn't proved the case. He hasn't even come on in the League Cup game, did he, at all? So it's good that he'll get out and get on loan and get some experience. And Blackpool are, again, it's about picking the right club. I think we should see him with Lewis Gibson at Reading, that it maybe wasn't the right club and we haven't been good at it. We've seemed to be good at picking those initial six-month loans for, like, I think Gibson did quite well at Fleetwood last season when he was, he got an injury, didn't he? But other than that, he played pretty well. So it's about picking the right loans and at the right time. And this seems like the right time for him to have 6 months in the is it Blackpool in League Two or League One? I can't remember, but League One. So yeah, it's kind of a good level for him. And then next season we can see then if he's ready to take that step up to the Championship, or even be involved in our squad. And then it kind of makes the links to Xerxes at Bayern make a bit more sense as well. I mean, I think we need a player anyway in that position, a forward position. I would like a, you know, Wilfred Zaha or Leon Bailey, but I know that's probably not realistic in this window. So if we're letting Sims go, if we're bringing in a player in Xerxes, who I think is the same age or just a bit younger, very similar type of striker, it would make sense that we're kind of testing one alone in terms of an outgoing, and then we're bringing one in if we can do to get maybe that experience and see what he's like for 6 months as well.
Yeah, I think it's clear, Peter, he's not quite ready, Alan Sims, yet for first team football. But you're a little bit disappointed he didn't get an opportunity maybe ahead of someone like Cheng Tosin. You know, I've said for a while, I think that if we bring a player on with 5 minutes to go, then it's, you know, trying to make a goal, it should probably be a lad who I think has got a future at the football club, albeit he might not be totally ready yet.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he was really unfortunate the way the Rotherham game sort of panned out, because I think that game would have been the one where he could come on. You know, we scored early, and you think, you know, if we get another goal or two, I think we probably would have seen him and he would have had a run out. But yeah, Cheng Tosin, I think most Evertonians knew that Tosin was a limited option for us. He's never really been able to adapt to the pace of the Premier League. The only thing that I think went in his favour was the fact that Carlo hadn't actually seen him, you know, in the flesh. He hadn't seen him play. So I think he was going off his reputation. He probably thought that there was an option in there. Obviously, he's an experienced player. He's played in the Champions League. So I think it was a case of, you know, sort of stick with what you know rather than take a risk on a young kid. I'd like to see Tosin moved on in this window if we can. On the basis that we bring someone else in. I just don't see, to be honest, I don't like to slag our players, but I don't see what he offers in terms of his general mobility, his ability to impact the game. And you're very right, Matt, a young player who's hungry and eager to prove himself, for me, will be a better option. So yeah, if the lad from Bayern can come in and provide that option, that'd be a fantastic move for us. And again, a short-term deal with an option to buy is an attractive prospect.
Yeah, I think Cheng's spray-on hair is getting more and more obvious as well, isn't it, as the weeks go by. I'm sure you've all seen the picture of him in training this week.
Yeah, the one in training. It's on my desktop now. We're playing up. I've sent it to my dad the other day. And it's just
I want to know where he gets it from.
Oh, God, Jesus. I know.
I'll be able to get rid of these hats whenever I come on if I find out where he gets them from.
The thing though, with that spray hair, you must have the trauma of going bald every single day. I couldn't. Once in a lifetime, is enough, surely.
What happens if it rains as well? You know, if he's like mid-match and he's got like, you know, all of his hair and then it rains, does it all fall out? Or is it like, how does it work?
It looks like he did the other week at that press conference where it's dripping down the side.
What if it gets in your eyes? Sting.
Well, I know we had obviously in the Rotherham game when he scored his second goal, and you know, VAR and everything like that. Putting that to one side, I just couldn't get angry because he was offside because of his spray-on lid, which just completely ruined me. Well, like, if he hadn't put his hair on for that game, he was offside by that much. So yeah, I'm like, that is so Everton. You cannot get more Everton than that.
Theory me, yeah. But looks like he's going to be here for a while, yeah, anyway. I wonder when he's just going to give up with it and just say, you know what, I'm just going to shave it all off. But I'm sure by the end of it.
Just get a transplant, you know. I'm sure he's got enough money to go and get one.
What the money?
Hey, he's the hair transplant capital of the world, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Maybe that's what he's doing. He's waiting until it all goes and then he's going to, you know, they're going to perform some miracle on him.
But he was absolutely filthy. just sort of on that, you mentioned there, Pete, in regards to you want to see us bring somebody in. It's sort of been a running theme on some of our shows this week about should we go out and spend big in this window, or, you know, we should keep our powder dry in a sense because we spent quite a lot in the summer, and I think the balance sheet, we had 140 million debt or loss over the course of the year. That's not the right word. Do you feel as though it's imperative for us to go out and get another forward if we're going to continue to be in this mix for top of the table, top four, top six? Does it feel that decisive to you, or do you feel as though this squad have sort of got it in and is keeping the mix anyway?
I personally think that we should be adding someone. I think, you know, if you look at the amount of money that Mascheri's spent since he's come into Everton, I know that we're in a you know, tight spot with financial fair play. But if we are able to bring some money in, if we are able, for example, to sell Moise Keane to PSG for decent money, I think if you spend £400 million to try and get us in the top four, well, at this moment in time, this is the best opportunity we've had since Mascheri's come in to get that top four. We're halfway through the season. I think if he wants to invest, if this is the time, if he was ever going to take a gamble, I think this is the time. I think if you were going to go the other way and try and pick someone up, you know, on the cheap, Josh King did, for me, look like a decent option, only because of the fact that Dominic Calvert-Lewin would be our first choice. I think King could come in and do a decent job, certainly against some of the more physical sides. I think Josh King could have done a decent job at a decent price. However, it sounds like he's pricing himself out with his wages. It is a balancing act, because what you don't want to do is go out and give someone a big contract and then be stuck with them, which is unfortunately why we're in the position we're in at the moment, where we've got a lot of players on big money who are bleeding the club dry in terms of financial fair play. So I think it's imperative that we try and get rid of some of these players, and hopefully if we can add one or two players into that squad, I think we can really push for that top four.
Yeah, I think, Les, you mentioned on Twitter earlier in the week that this is a great opportunity and you want to see us sort of go for it. And, you know, I'm very much of that mindset most of the time.
Something you probably do know. Progressive can not only offer you a great price when you bundle home and auto, they offer you round-the-clock protection. Something you probably don't know, the average garage door is made up of 1.3 millimeter aluminum panels. Something you probably do know, your neighbor likes to tinker with his dirt bike. Something you probably don't know, a runaway dirt bike can take out your garage door and a good portion of your car bumper. Bundle your home and auto with Progressive and get more than a great price. Get round-the-clock protection. Something you know for the things you don't know. Coverage from Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates and third-party insurers, and subject to policy terms. Bundle discount not available in all states or situations.
Just to go back to what there, it does feel imperative that we get someone out the door on big money first. And, you know, the obvious one is Moise Keane, who's been linked with PSG and, you know, 30-odd million and that kind of thing. But apart from that, maybe Bernard for 10 million if we can get him. You know, there's been reports about him going to Dubai, having the last couple of days. But it feels as though before we can do anything and find that player, as hard as it is to find, that someone who's on big wages and can command a decent fee goes out the door.
Yeah, and there's not really many saleable assets, as you say. Bernard, you know, even if we only got 10 million for him, which isn't a lot at all, it's clear profit, isn't it? Because we got him for nothing and it gets a massive wage off the wage bill. Obviously, Keane is our most saleable option. And I think at this moment in time, as you said, if we can get the money for him now and reinvest it straight away, I think that would be the ideal situation for us, because I can't see him, I think Pat said before, I can't see him coming back ever. And I don't even think he's got the inclination to come back. I'm not convinced he ever wanted to be at Everton. The whole transfer was just completely, completely mad to me. Just on the January thing, I think it'll be really frustrating if we don't strengthen the team now, given the fact that we did in the January that Allardyce was in charge. So it was like Mascheri really panicked then, and you could see because he appointed Allardyce, but he really panicked that we could go down and everything he's done will be like 100 times harder, you know, to get us back into the league and then challenge it again. But then he threw what, 40 million, was it?
Well, I think Walcott was 20, wasn't he?
Yeah, Walcott and Tosin. Not the same, really. Yes, 40, 45 million. You know, so to do that, to sort of stave off possible relegation that was never really on the cards. Allardyce well talked him into that, didn't he? Well, look, lad, we're down here. Unless we sign some players, we're down. To not do it now would be dead disappointing. And it just seems like it's another... You look at selling Rooney. That was a massive opportunity missed because we didn't get the money we should have got for him. I think United paid 18 million for Ronaldo. At the same time, you know, three, four times the player he was at the time. And it just feels like that could be another missed opportunity like that. We've got something we can just build on, just one or two seasons maybe. this is the chance to do it. If we don't, could blow up on our face and we'll be really disappointed.
Just before we come to you on this, Patrick, just very quickly, Les, is this not the collateral of that, though? You know, that spell you mentioned there where we went out and spent $45 million in January out of blind panic and we probably didn't really need to. And, you know, maybe the manager the summer after, we got Koeman in and sacked him and paid off all his staff, same with Silva, et cetera, you know. It feels as though, while it's great and ideally you want to invest from a position of strength, when you've made as many bad decisions as we have, it's when you eventually get to that position of strength, there's a lot of ground to be made up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Machini will have PTSD, I reckon, over everything and between 2015 and point in Ancelotti, to be honest. That will be his frame of reference, won't it? You can't just be throwing bad money after bad money. This is different, though, because we've got Ancelotti, who clearly knows what he's doing. Get a tune out of these players. You've just got to back him. I think the striker one is the striker's the pressing issue, isn't it? Because as we've seen, if we haven't got Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison can't fit in there, pretty short up front.
Yeah, Patrick, you were nodding along with Les there. You want to see Everton go out and sign someone who can contribute as well?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think my frustration is as much with the fact, not the fact, but you know, like the kind of suspicion that Mashiri wouldn't back us. I think he would. I think if Ancelotti and Brands went to Mashiri right now and said, they said, give us 30 million or 40 million and we will get Champions League this season, Mashiri would believe it. Mashiri believes in Ancelotti, and rightly so. And I think he believes in Brands. And this isn't a criticism of Ancelotti or Brands. I'm kind of on the fence with Brands. I think he's done a very good job with a lot of things, but we mentioned like past issues kind of catching up with us. Well, Brands has contributed to that. Without getting into the who's signing, were the managers or the director of footballs or whatever, you know, Brands did sign off on the deal to give Bernard 120 grand a week. He did sign off on, you know, certain new contracts or anything like that. And also with moving players out, I sometimes feel like, are we proactive enough in it? But I think in this window we just have this opportunity to add that one bit of quality that we really need. But my frustration comes that we, you know, the last transfer window only ended 3 months ago, and we're in exactly the same position now as we were then. We knew we needed another forward, and I just don't understand why we couldn't have maybe pushed the boat out that bit more in that last transfer window, rather than saying we'll get to January and look then, when we know that January is not a good time to do business. So it's just that frustration. It is a balancing act, but you know, someone who that forward just to alternate those positions. And I think I mentioned it before, but Everton fans, we have this, and I think it comes from those years when we had no money and we were operating on a shoestring squad kind of thing, a skeleton squad. You need 12 to 13 players that are top quality in any squad to get you top four. You just do. And obviously the best sides have 18, 19 players. We need to get away from this idea that we have a first 11, because I don't think Ancelotti even believes that really. He knows that, you know, that kind of strongest team that we played in the first four games of the season, I doubt we'll see those together again more than once or twice this season, just because of injuries and suspensions and COVID and everything else. So we need to get away from that kind of idea of just having that first 11 and wondering about, well, if we spend 25 million on one player and they don't start, then it's a waste of money and we'll need to punt someone else. You need to kind of speculate to accumulate in a way. So I really would want to see us in this last 2 weeks just go out and kind of get that difference maker.
Yeah.
At the moment, it looks like it's going to have to be on loan. But I think, you know, the right loan deal, a loan to buy, an 18-month loan even, something like that, those options are available. It's just about, you know, finding the right club and the right player. But there's definitely options there. And at the moment, we're more attractive to players than we ever have been in the last 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, I think you say the word difference maker there, and I think that would obviously be great, but I don't even think we need right now in January that sort of player. You know, I've been saying Enner Valencia's name on this show for the last week, and I think someone like him would be, you know, I was just thinking then about striking options of teams who are like around us, and you look at Leicester, and obviously they've got Vardy, who is effectively their Calvert-Lewin, who plays every game, scores most of the goals, is you know, probably the best player. But you look beyond him as well, and if he's not fit, obviously there's going to be issues in the team. But they've got Iheanacho, who is fine. He's a good Premier League striker. You've got Jose Perez again, not the best, but he can play across that front three, do a job in all those positions, and he's fine in those areas. You know, they're both upgrades on someone like Cheng Tosin. So you, I think you've had a... Sorry, mate, go on.
So that's the point, yeah, that I don't necessarily mean kind of... I'd love it, but I don't necessarily mean that Zaha, Bailey kind of quality just yet, because those players are obviously hard to get, but... That difference maker in terms of someone to bring off the bench, I think we've still not had a substitute who scored in the league this season. And we've seen Iwobi step up recently, and he's kind of made this kind of good squad of 11 or 12 players into a good squad of 12 or 13 now, and we can kind of rely on him, and that's down to his hard work and Ancelotti. It's just having another player who can come on and add something, and yet it doesn't necessarily need to be a 30, 40 million player. Josh King could be a good option, and I mean, I don't buy that anybody is going to. And I'm sure him and his agent know that nobody will pay him 120 grand a week. I think that's him kind of thinking, well, if I end up at West Ham, can I get the best deal out of them? He's been linked with Burnley today, and I don't think he'd want to move to Burnley. I think he would to get out of the Championship, but I don't necessarily think he'd want to see himself at Burnley. And if he says, well, I want 100 grand a week, Burnley aren't going to go anywhere near that. I kind of think if Everton came to him and said, we'll offer you 60 grand a week and a 2.5 year contract, I think Josh King would jump at it right now. And that's not bigging Everton up. I just think we're such a step up from where Bournemouth are, and we've got such a good manager, and we've got such a good chance to really push on. He could see himself as part of that, and I think he'd jump at the opportunity. So I think talk of like him pricing himself out of a move, it's just kind of all that cloak and dagger stuff that goes on behind the scenes, really.
Yeah, and I think even with Moyes in charge, West Ham are probably going to be more sensible now. So you can't really imagine that.
Well, exactly,
Grounded him as well. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see on that one. Just before we wrap up today, Pete, the girls are back in action at the weekend for the first time in almost a month. A lot of games off during the festive period, first game of the year. And it looked like the rest had done them loads of good because they absolutely battered Bristol City 4-0. Izzy Christensen on the score sheet twice, Simone McGill, and Meg Finnegan as well. Looked like the break had just really revitalised them after a bit of a tough end to the year.
Absolutely. They came out fighting. They were 1-0 up after about 4 minutes, got a second before half-time. The second half was pretty straightforward as well. One of the best things about it was the fact that Valerie Gorvan and Rika Savecki both came off the bench, so that they were missing for a number of games before Christmas. They were huge losses for Everton. So, those results that we had a bit of a bad spell again. You know, we lost against City, Arsenal, Chelsea. Those two players, Valerie Gorvan and Rika Zavecki, they're the difference makers. They're the ones who take us up a level. I thought the team on Sunday were absolutely superb. They seemed to be back to their best. They were full of confidence. And we still got a few more players to come back from injury as well. Claire Emsley has just signed on a permanent deal. She was on a short-term deal, but she signed on a permanent deal. She's out injured at the moment, but she's a fantastic player to be coming in. Unfortunately, we've lost Damaris Agarola. She's gone to Lyon today. She's finalised her move today, which is a shame. We couldn't do anything about that one because they met a release clause. But hopefully we can improve, bring a player in to replace her. I've heard a few names mentioned, and if it is one of those names, then I think we can all be very happy with that. I think it's a time now for us to kick on. Unfortunately, our game tonight against Birmingham has been called off because of a waterlogged pitch. Unfortunately, that's just the nature of the beast in the WSL. A lot of the pitches and a lot of the stadiums that the teams play at, they do suffer from waterlogged pitches and a lot of cancellations. So it's going to be a tough couple of months, I think, to catch up with some of the fixture congestion. I know that the FA Cup is at the moment it's being discussed as to how they're going to try and get the FA Cup done this season. There was one mention about having a coin toss for some of the earlier rounds, which is frankly ridiculous. They're better off just cancelling it and playing it next year, and just moving on to next season. But in terms of Everton, I think we've hopefully turned a bit of a corner again. We've got players back fit who are important players, and we can hopefully kick on and get back to our best.
Yeah, and just one player I wanted to speak about with you before we finish. At the end of the year, we did our Blue Room Players of the Year for the lads and the girls, and sort of speaking to you about who've been the best players for the girls this year, and, you know, rattled off some very familiar names. And one that you did mention that you actually said would have been your player of the year, and we don't really speak about probably enough, is Meg Finnegan on the score sheet the weekend, clean sheet. Seems as though she's currently on a really encouraging development path.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, she's been at Everton for 10 years. She's come right, you know, up through the ranks at Everton. It was her first goal for Everton. She actually scored about three or four in pre-season, and we were all sort of saying to her, you know, you're going to get your first proper goal now. So I think she's going to be made up to have got that, you know. But Meg is, the improvement from Meg over the last two seasons in particular has been absolutely incredible. She, when I first, you know, sort of saw Meg play, she was almost like a defensive midfielder, or, you know, she was or like a sweeper, do you know what I mean, or played in a three. But when Gabby George got injured last season, Meg has just stepped up, and she's been absolutely incredible. She's been a real leader at the back. You know, she's great on the ball. She's fantastic in the air. A really classy centre half. But also, she loves the club. She absolutely bleeds blue. You know, in the run up to the FA Cup final, I was fortunate enough to be involved on with a Zoom call with Meg, with Shiny Boy Hlorka and Dan Turner. And the way Meg spoke about the club, it was just a pleasure to hear. You know, she's a proper blue. So I'm just delighted for her, and I think she's got all the potential in the world. She's played for England up till, you know, the under 21 level. I think she's got a huge future ahead of her, and I wouldn't be surprised to see her getting a call up very soon, because if she did get that call up, she'd massively deserve it.
Absolutely, good stuff there. Hopefully we continue that and get as many games on as possible over the next few weeks. We are out of time today. Cheers to all the lads for coming on, and of course to Super Kev Campbell as well for joining us earlier. We'll be previewing the game at the weekend against Sheffield United. Sheffield Wednesday in that ridiculous Sunday night kickoff time. We're going to watch the scoring at some point, won't we, Les?
Yeah, we'll sort that.
Yeah.
Sunday night before the game. Who knows?
But yeah, thanks very much to everyone for listening and for watching. If you're listening, give us a rating, give us a review. And as ever, if you want to hear more from us, why not come over and join us on Patreon on the Blue Room Extra. Multiple Everton shows every weekday, analysing and reflecting on all of Everton's games. Patreon.com/TheBlueRoomExtra if you want to get involved in that. If not, we'll speak to you soon here on the weekly show.
The General Insurance presents Shower Ballads by Shaq.
And I'm gonna keep on
loving you, 'cause it's the only thing I wanna do.
Turns out, everyone does sound better in the shower. And it turns out, The General is a quality insurance company that's been saving people money for nearly 60 years.
I just wanna keep on loving you.
For a great low rate and nearly 60 years of quality coverage, make the right call and go with The General.
The General Auto Insurance Services, Inc. and Insurance Agency, Nashville, Tennessee. Some restrictions apply.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.